and it's whatever. Most disgusting performances I've ever seen anybody in this country, much less a U.S. president, was Trump in his news conference talking about the families of the Supreme Court people and how they don't have any loyalty. Does he understand it's a loyalty to the Constitution and not to him? He clearly does not.
No. But, you know, this is not new.
No.
I mean, you know, it's, I'm beginning, let me finish my coffee, to think maybe these, you know, people talk about how on YouTube, on social media, tracking Trump's mental and cognitive decline.
Oh, yeah, well.
I'm beginning to wonder, you know, how true that may be.
Oh, I'm no doctor, but it's pretty much very true, I think. It's the same thing as Dad, it's the same time frame.
Yeah, but his dad lived to like 90.
Yeah, but he's...
but his dad started to show very significant signs of decline earlier on. Well, gentlemen, I do have a question. Where were you 24 years ago yesterday?
I think I was watching it at Robin's apartment with a bunch of people.
I know I was in Worcester, Massachusetts at my roommate's place watching it on TV because that was the last...
Watching what on TV, James?
We were watching the Miracle on Ice, John. The last time that an actual college amateur team beat a pro team.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Because remember, a lot of people don't remember that Chief and I were discussing on the ride in is back in 1976, the Canadians sent some of their best pros over there, and the Soviet Union split. They realized these guys were as good as pros. Now, granted, they were supposed to be on the Red Army team, but as they found out later on from such people as Sergei Fedorov, the only thing about Army with them is that they had a uniform. They played hockey every day. That was their job.
Sure.
Was to play hockey.
Got an interesting story regarding that trip. I think it was the Maple Leafs went over there, or maybe it was a combined Canada team. I'm not sure.
It was a combined because they had the Esposito brothers. They had a lot of pros.
Well, so they go over there, and one of the guys, you know, one day we have nothing else to talk about. When the Russians had their planned economy, well, it was always the 5-year plan, wasn't it, Jen? I think it was.
Yep.
They had their planned economy. You had some, shall we say, discontinuities. Stuff like if you paid people for like nails and so forth. Nails, tax, those kinds of things. Those know what they are. They'd be paid by the pound. We found places made an awful lot of railroad spikes because they were heavy, right? So this, they did the same thing, I think, with chandeliers. So some of the guys from Toronto get in this big hotel in Russia. This is a true story. And one guy was convinced all the rooms were bugged, right? So he's looking for the bug. And on the floor, he sees this big bolted thing. And he's like, what the hell is that? So he starts unscrewing or turning the bolts. Well, it turns out the chandeliers were also being paid by the pound. So they're heavy as hell. So that way you can hang them on the ceiling. Could use like a regular electrical outlet, you can't hear. That way was they actually have something that, a plate on the floor above that was bolted that you could hang the chandelier from. So the guy unscrews the plate, he hears this huge crash in the hotel room downtown. He's like, oops. That was a true story. It was in like the Daily News or somebody was with the guy. He goes, yeah.
I'll try to make it quick, but when I lived over in London, we met a correspondent, and he was one of the, an English guy married to an Argentinian lady, and he is stationed in Moscow. He worked for the International Herald Tribune, which, you know, back in the day was the New York Times over in, first it was owned by the Chicago Tribune, then it was owned by the New York Times. And when he was based there, you know, everything was bugged. So there was a New Year's Eve party, and he swore this was true. He said that when they were doing the toast, they would like to toast to everybody, you know, everybody with us, everyone that's left us, and everyone that's listening but can't be with us. And he said just then the phone rang, and he heard this on the phone. It was the Russians that were on the listening post that were helped him pop the champagne cork.
Okay, yeah, along the same lines, you know, all the stuff with Epstein and so forth, right? Along the same lines, is anybody from our government who we can't believe at all? Am I convinced? Whatever. I'm not so sure you can ever believe them. But this group, you can't believe anything. Has anybody ever checked? Has anybody ever read whether anybody has checked the little island and the place in Manhattan and the place in New Mexico and the place in Ohio and all these places? Has anybody checked those places for bugs and hidden cameras so we actually have a story of who is being filmed doing what? I haven't read anything like that. Have you?
No, in fact, the guy that bought his estate in New Mexico cut off any requests. And the state just passed a law putting it under investigation. He wouldn't let anybody into the property. Wouldn't anybody look for bodies or anything. He was a far right investor that bought that.
Well,
so,
I like the part about the thing in Manhattan where the hot tub was outfitted with essentially artificial women's breasts that you could like feel while you're in the hot tub. Where do you? I'm going to show my age. Where do you look in the yellow pages over? Who would do that for you?
I mean, I don't even think I ever saw that in Playboy magazine in the early 70s. No. I never saw that either.
No, because one of the young girls that he was messing with from the, evidently there was a modeling agency like two blocks away or something. And I don't know if it was Maxwell, but an older lady would go down there and recruit some girls. And the girl would go and give him a massage or do something. And he would, unfortunately, it's a family show, but kind of take care of himself. But he wouldn't be in a hot tub. And she'd be given, she goes, yeah, it was just these women's breasts in the hot tub that he would reach over and fondle. Like, I can't even if you were weird enough to want that, where do you get a contractor to do that? I mean, there's got to be somebody for everybody, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think the only... I've heard the phrase, the Epstein class, and Chief, and Jim, as you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but then it does slap you in the face that they operate in a different level, and they think they're above the law.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, if you find a real stupid one, like Andrew Windsor Mountbatten, who is as dumb as a skunk, knock on wood, our children never turn out like him. But, they were all, they just thought that was the way it was because that was the way that people had money. I mean, it was just...
It's almost like such an elite little group that you don't even... Remember the movie with the group tried to eat the last one of every species or something? What's the name of that movie?
Oh, yeah. The Freshman.
Yeah. And just because you could. And then they were chasing a monitor lizard or something? They're chasing Komodo dragon. Are you chasing it around the shopping center?
Yes.
Tell you what, those things are vicious. You don't want to come near one of those things. They are about as tough an animal as there is. They eat snakes and they don't care. The snakes bite them. They don't care. Those things are mean sums of bitch.
You know what? It's not being vicious. You know what they have? They have the, as they say, the foulest mouths. They have such bacteria in their mouth. If they bite you, it doesn't make, they don't, it's not like they look at, they know that in like several hours you're going to die.
Oh, great.
So they just wait until you die and then they eat you.
Well, you might ask, why do we have... By the way, the hockey team, I don't know. Kevin was the one who tweeted it out yesterday or texted it out. Those could have been the two best hockey teams ever on ice together, ever. I mean, there's like one or two guys. Well, some teams have more. Hawks had one, and he played for Finland. Virtually, it's way better than an NFL All-Star game. I mean, there wasn't anybody there that wasn't spectacular. I mean, it really was, I don't know what you'd even call it, but it was the absolute cream of the cream, wouldn't you say?
Are you talking about for our team?
Both teams.
Oh, yeah. They were both, they were made up of all the NHL players.
Yeah, all NHL. Yeah. And, you know, it's, is that, should we, every year what, Webster brings in a new word and they toss out a couple of ones. Should we kick the word amateur out of the dictionary? Is anybody an amateur anywhere now?
No.
I guess we are, but we suck.
Well, I mean, it's a joke to say that college football is, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And you know my feeling about that. After growing up in Ann Arbor, it never was amateur. And this is going back to when I was there in the 60s and 70s.
Well, it was amateur for the players for a while. It never really was for the coaches or anybody. Well, somewhat amateur, depending how good you were. Are you there?
No, sorry, say it again.
I was saying it was somewhat amateur, more so than now. There's degrees, I guess.
The administration wasn't.
No, they were. Oh, God, no.
No, they were just, yeah.
But, hey, the reason why, other than just general levity and knowledge, we have Mr. John Lee on this morning. Mr. Flanagan will be piling in a little bit.
I'm here, Tom.
Oh, you're okay. Well, then, John, pile in. Mr. Flanny, pile in. I've been watching some of the stocks that I watch for people, and I sort of noticed some of your international firms, even maybe an IBM, certainly Accenture, OMC, the international marketing firm, have really had a rough time stock-wise. And I ran into a lady at Dr. J's Super Bowl party, who I've known forever, and her daughter, I knew her before she went to college, and she was a rower somewhere. She went to some Eastern school. She was a rower anyway. Now she's on the bench at ACN, and the mother is saying she's very worried because she hasn't been off the bench in a while. And Jan worked for ACN back in the day and is very aware of what goes on in these. And I think it's one of those deals where most people, not that most people are dumbos, they're not. Anything that you are not familiar with that you do for a job or whatever, even though you may think you know all about it, you really don't. I mean, I don't. But so when you have a project, for instance, it's my biggest criticism. Well, not my biggest. I mean, I've known people who knew Trump years and years ago, so I didn't have to be president for me not to like the guy. But my biggest concern with these people is they say they're doing this for a purpose, but I think it's all BS because they're shooting them. Whatever they think they want to bring business back, whatever they want to do, and they do something else that actually makes it so nobody's ever going to bring business back or makes it very difficult to get money or whatever. So when we talk about these international firms, and we're pissing off a lot of countries overseas, people don't like Americans anymore, whatever. I thought maybe from the beginning, I know I'm skipping around here, but like when Bill Moriarty was on, people would say, okay, we need to build a nuclear plant. And some MAGA somebody, the Sierra Club's going to sue and you'll never... Okay, that's probably true. But the fact is, a nuclear plant, a water treatment plant, anything like that is a massive undertaking that I think a lot of people would have no concept of how big of a job it is. I mean, I had no idea how big a job it was to take a bunch of steel in one door and pop a railroad car out the end. It's like months of planning, months of ordering, months of working. It's a massive deal. So the idea of somebody ordering, a group into doing systems work or whatever from Accenture or whatever, I thought I'd bring John on to say, okay, describe a medium-sized job, describe a huge job, how long is the planning, how many people are involved, what's the cost, what has to, because I think the current administration, and maybe the one before it, the one before that, have made it harder and harder for somebody to look 2 or 3 years out and say, this is what the world's going to look like, so I'm going to commit myself, my capital, my people, to do that. I think it's very difficult to do that now, maybe more so than I can ever remember. So I just thought John would take us from somebody thinking they need a systems project, somebody thinking they need this. How long before you get it spec'd out? How long before you hire somebody?
Well, you know,
take it from the beginning, John. Take it from the beginning. Right. What's a typical mid job?
Yeah, we're going to. I talking to me or the important John?
No, you. I mean, say what you. Take a project from.
You know, so let's take. Let's let me. You know, I made partner at Accenture on one deal. Okay, I was involved in. It was a UK utility and we were going to consolidate four or five billing and customer systems into
one.
Had
they bought other places, Jan? Why were they different like that?
Well, because this is just an internal reorganization efficiency. We're going to take four or five disparate systems, and we're going to consolidate into one. And it was a 3 to 4 year project, and it was $500 million. And this is in 2002.
Wow. Okay. How many people were on the job?
We probably had, if you were to extrapolate out the people that were offshore, we probably had several hundred.
Wow.
Okay. But let me bring this up to date here about with something, you know.
How long did those guys plan before they said, let's do this?
Well, that's the problem, is that, you know, these implementations are so long that people that come in, you know, the first executive, you know, is there for the first year and a half and gets fired. And then the second comes in. So by the time you're in the last third of the project, you've got an executive that was never involved in the planning, was never involved in, you know, in jawboning all the senior execs in the board to to approve these projects. But I want to answer your question specifically. You know, so one of the issues that Accenture has is that AI is just as difficult as any other large digital transformation. Take my example of basically, you know, combining four or five old systems into one new one. It means you have to have your security processes all done, fixed. It means you have to have your internal processes all done and fixed. It means you have to have your data cleansed. That alone is a year to 2 years. Okay, so if you're talking about a major system which has a lot of AI components in it, you know, who's going to spend the money when the payback is really in? And then when the payback at a minimum is going to be in 3 years. At minimum, and probably four or five.
What happens if you start one of these things and you never finish it? Do you just screw everything up?
Well, that's happened too. It happens all the time. I have another job I was on. We were converting. It was probably one of the world's, I would say, freight forwarding companies based in Singapore. They were on a mainframe system, and their logistics system, we were converting off of a mainframe onto an open platforms. Guess what? We did the conversion, and of course it took 2 or 3 years to do that. And the CIO was so upset, he goes, no, you can't do the amount of testing you want to do. Just make it, you know, go live. Guess what? It fell on its face. We had to almost go back to the mainframe system.
What are you doing What are you doing in the meantime?
Logistics system for the fifth largest logistics company in the world. It happens all the time.
So, plenty of pile in here, but how stable? The world going forward is never stable, but how stable do people think? What do you think I keep talking about this all the time. What is people's view of the future before you go through on these kind of projects? I mean, it's you either have to figure where your company's going to be, where the economy's going to be. I mean, who does all that?
Well, you've got strategy people inside the company, right? I mean, it's basically the finance organization that does that. The finance with, you know, some of the marketing strategists and so forth that do that. I mean, there's various different types of projects. One is just an internal project for efficiency. Like the one at Centrica was an efficiency. And that they're going to have to do sooner or later anyways. You have every major organization, every major multinational has systems that go back 50 years. And it is hard to get those things out. Let me give you another example. Maybank, which is the biggest bank in Malaysia, and it's the biggest, it's a Muslim bank. Okay, so their core banking system is on COBOL.
Wow.
And they looked at what it would take to get that off of COBOL, which nobody uses anymore. It was so expensive. They started hiring, you know, once again, you're talking $500 million. And the risk, okay, this is their core banking system. And the risk is so high, there's not one executive that's willing to go in front of the regulator and say, we want to go to open systems. We want to update our core banking system. What's the risk? Well, we don't know, because we don't know what the code does. The list goes on and on. I'm not sure I'm answering your question directly, but so there's various projects. One is the internal systems projects, which is what I know, is something to allow you to go into new markets and to, but the projects that will not be stopped will be the internal efficiency projects. But everybody is on hold right now. Everybody is, this is what the people at Accenture are telling me.
You know, I've always wondered in things like banking, John and Tom, where the FDIC closes the bank down Friday, Monday it opens up. If the new acquiring bank, whoever's been taking it over, and that, I don't know if it works seamlessly or not, but it seems to happen without much preparation. Although I'm sure that the thing has probably been in the works for a while.
But then you think something not like, really, John. Being in the banking industry, I can tell you what happens. Generally, if they know the bank is about to go under, they are already looking for a buyer. And the buyer pretty much is guaranteeing that the bank will stay open and they'll take over. They make a deal with the FDIC on how much of the debt that they will take. The main thing is to make sure that the depositors are, and it does seem seamless.
And even integrating the systems and their records.
That comes down the road. Generally, yeah. Most banks are mainframe at that point, but they don't want a run on the bank. That's why they close it on Friday and open it on Monday. They will go in on that weekend and do a audit and go through all of the books. They make a deal with the FDIC. I know with, Chase took over WaMu. They did it for like $2 a share, but the scare was if WaMu did not open, we would have a run on the banks. That is the biggest scare the FDIC wants, because they don't have as much. They can't cover everyone's deposits. Not even close.
And answer your question, Jan, in addition to what Jimmy's saying, it's not the same issue, because you can just transfer all the accounts to the new bank. So you don't have to play with the old systems if you don't want to.
That is correct. You wait. They generally wait down the road to see it, but most of them are all on mainframe, so it's Fortran. It's not that difficult. The biggest issue with the buyer is how much of the debt of the old bank, the acquiring bank, is going to take on. The FDIC takes on a percentage of it.
Well, now you're walking down a different road there, but it's...
And those do seem to settle down fairly fast without... any disruption or nervousness. But I remember that when United acquired Continental Airlines, what's that, 25 years ago now? And I knew people who worked at United who said they could not get their ticketing or their reservation systems to mesh. And this was an acquisition that was in the works for a while. And this dogged United for a while.
Let me tell you, United until... So once again, we have system overhang, or system debt is what they used to call it. The United reservation system, up till probably 20-25 years ago, was a Unisys mainframe. Unisys stopped making mainframes years and years and years ago, and they would have to have parts specially made for that. So those systems are so complex, you don't want to screw with them. It took everything to get off the damn Unisys reservation system. So that's that doesn't surprise me. Going back to your banking example, nobody touches the systems. They put, Jimmy, as you said, they they put money into it, but nobody touches the internal systems. That's the last thing you want to go.
Yeah,
back
you're kind of talking on two subjects here, but correctly on both. But if a bank takes over all the clients in another bank, they don't have to do anything with the system. They just move all the accounts to their system.
Correct.
So in other words, if for whatever reason PTI decided to leave RBC, something happened at RBC, RBC is fine. So if we decided we're going to go to, you know, Flanny Clearing Firm, we would do a tape-to-tape transfer. Everybody's assets would just go from RBC to the other place. It would have nothing to do with the system. It'd just be like if somebody decided from Merrill Lynch, for instance, they wanted to transfer to PTI. They fill out an ACATS, and the person's assets move to the RBC's system. So there's no, it's not like, matter of fact, well, I mean, the old place would be just be sitting there with no clients. The clients would all be at the new place. So the banking deposits, I think, move just like that. Am I right, Mr. Lee?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
yeah.
It's not, now, as
they just,
the,
like, add prefixes to account numbers.
Yeah.
So they can
all of a sudden,
they don't, even do that.
No,
they just leave it alone until they do the integration of the systems.
And that typically takes, you know, how long? What kind of a time span is that?
That will take a couple of years total.
Yeah.
You got a quick story. I don't want to wander off because we're on a decent roll here, but regarding the United system, when the CBOE was put together in 1973, they said, okay, what are we going to do for trade match? And the only system around at the time that was able to match things up, like people with planes, like a reservation system, was the United system. So the original CBOE trade match system was the same system that United used to match people to planes.
Wow, didn't know that.
And I think maybe they're still not using that. They were using it when I left the board. What ended up happening, it was so efficient at matching things up that every other thing they did after that, they hung on the old system. So the old system kept doing less and less, and finally all it did was trade match and all your new stuff. And it became, when the exchanges started, the question always was, how many trades could we do a day? That was always the capacity of the system. But as time went by, they realized they could do pretty much infinite number of trades per day. Not infinite, but the big problem was in the quotes, in sending out all the different quotes. As you got more and more stocks and you change the prices all the time, the quote feed became the rate determining step. Matter of fact, Blair Hull took the whole exchange down one day. This is a kind of an interesting story. I'm trading OEX, but all of a sudden the whole damn place goes down. I'm going, and I'm on the board, right? I go, well, what the hell happened? Well, when they put in these auto quote systems where the system would actually when I first started, every single quote was changed manually. You had a quote reporter in a pit, and you'd call out the different quotes, and they'd keep changing them. And finally say, okay, move the deeps up a half. In other words, the options that never trade, the deep and the money ones, or something like that. So this would all be done by quote reporters who were really fast typing in on this stuff. Great people. And so then people said, all right, we're going to do this in an automated auto quote system. So the CBOE was smart enough that if the auto quotes came in, the first thing they would do is look to see what the old quote was. And if it was the same quote, they didn't change it. Because if you changed it, your feed was, Mr. Lee, if you talk about, you know, maybe a million quotes, that if every second or every 3 seconds you change them, your capacity you needed was dramatic. So the system was designed to look and see, and if they were the same, it didn't. Blair Hull said he wanted his own. He's the guy who ran for governor when Obama was becoming senator, and he wants his own auto quote system. But he forgot to put the part in about checking. So he's got probably 2,000 or 3,000 quotes in his stocks that he had in his DPM. And all of a sudden, he's putting out like a million quotes every 10 seconds because he's changing them constantly, even if they were the same. Took the whole CBOE down. I mean, those are the kind of glitches I suspect, Mr. Lee, that you run into when you start doing this stuff, things you never even thought about.
I just typed in something here. They identified the last major on-premise system by late 2021 that they wanted to replace, and it is still ongoing now. In fact, they had the outage in 2026, February this month. Okay, that was caused by an upgrade issue of the process of moving off the legacy Unisys system. So that goes to your point. Getting off these systems is immensely, because don't forget, you've got that Unisys system, just as an example, has what, 70 years of processes and knowledge built into it. Okay, and that's just, you know, United there. But even as this month, they had an outage related to that upgrade of getting off that Unisys system. Going back to your point about the trading system, Tom.
Well, I guess what would the conclusion we're trying to come here, or opinions on conclusions, what does the current political climate do to these kinds of decisions? Whether you're right or left, it doesn't matter. If you're in a business, you're looking forward and saying, my biggest bitch, honestly, about the current administration is they're doing all this stuff allegedly to help businesses, and yet on the other, they're shooting themselves in the other foot. I don't see how a business makes a decision now. Who knows what the interest rates are going to be? Who knows? I mean, the silent dog in the room regarding this tariff stuff is if this guy doesn't find a way to do illegal tariffs without Congress, in my opinion, it's a tax. It's absolutely a tax. If he doesn't find a way to do it, they're broke now. He's going to have to go back and get rid of the great big beautiful bill, because one, the cutting taxes for his buddies was in quid pro quo and raising regressive tax through the tariff person. Now, if the tariff regressive tax goes down, what happens to the other stuff? I mean, we're even more broke. So
I'm looking at the Wall Street Journal here, Chief, and you know, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on the front page opinion articles, and 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are anti-tariff. Okay, the next one, you know, talking about how the Supreme Court is trying to get Congress to. Now, this is the Wall Street Journal. This is not exactly a populist rag. How they're trying to revive Congress and get to do their job. And then they have a couple, you know, then there's one there, which I don't know where that would stand. But so, you know, the Wall Street Journal is anti-tariff, but I'm not sure that has, and which is, you know, kind of the flagship of the establishment Republicans. Well,
Republicans have been anti-tariff for 100 years.
You know, it's...
Ronald Reagan was total anti-tariff.
Oh, yeah.
This is somehow or other... This has been up Trump's behind for years and years, and he thinks this is a way to sneak a tax on poor people. And they constantly talk about we're not paying the tax. That's a flat-out lie. Sure we are. I don't really have a problem if Congress, you know, Carl comes up with a lot of good reasons to have tariffs. If somebody's polluting and you're not, should a tariff even up the playing field? I don't have a problem with that. If somebody has child labor and we don't, If you can identify that and have a tariff to even up the playing field, so if some country just doesn't move where they could do child labor, compete with somebody here, I don't have a problem with that. I don't know how you put it together. I mean, I can't even imagine who would be the major domo of that decision. But in theory, I don't have a problem with that. But just in general, I don't think it's a good idea. But Mr. Flanagan, what do you think of all this? I mean,
I think tariffs are really the only way to address, you know, trade imbalances or deficits, of which we have many.
but what makes you think they're not? We've been. If you believe these people, which I don't, by the way, anything they ever said, nor did I believe anything Biden ever said. So it's just I'm sort of equal on that. Jan, a trade imbalance does not mean that you have a problem. He's talked people into thinking that. That's
but if it's systemic, as it is with us, Tom.
What do you mean by it?
How many countries do we run a trade surplus with?
Does anybody talk about the?
I don't know if it's any.
Yeah, but we did with Brazil.
Does anybody talk about the current? There's the trade surplus and there's a current account balance. The current account balance is the one that's important. Nobody even talks about that. So if you have a country that for whatever reason, okay, the theory behind this, and the theory is pretty simple. If you got a country, all they do, they got a bunch of guys that are blue down there. And when I say blue, I don't mean blue state. I mean they're color blue. They don't do anything. All they do is make cocoa. And somebody here wants cocoa, and we buy the cocoa from them. We're going to have a trade imbalance. Yet that guy is going to take our dollars, and he's going to buy something else from another country. Then maybe he's going to buy something else from us. You either believe that or you don't. Every single trade imbalance is not somebody screwing us. I mean, Trump thinks that. Trump's an idiot for thinking that. It is simply isn't true. Or, I mean, we have a trade imbalance with Canada and automobiles. Guess what? There are automobiles, and the companies are owned by us. So the profit from the automobiles comes back in a check, even though there's a trade imbalance. There's not a current account imbalance. I mean, the lack of understanding here is endemic in this country, and then people turn around and believe the politician on either side that they like, and both of them are flat out lying. That just because you have a trade imbalance doesn't mean you have a problem at all. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how.
I'm saying it's so, you know, overtaken the system though, Tom. Where there is no, I mean, what are the benefits to us right now? The jobs that have been shipped overseas by our company.
Okay.
Ultimately,
right.
But all of this it, at some point when the numbers are so great,
separate,
and the pattern is so clear.
Separate the Chinese situation with not caring about pollution, not caring about child labor. Separate that from Liechtenstein, where we import dentures. Okay? We buy dentures from Liechtenstein. It doesn't make them bad. Liechtenstein's going to turn around and buy a car from us. That's the way it's supposed to work.
But do they?
Or the people over here own the denture company and they get a dividend check. I don't think we have a current account balance problem with Liechtenstein. I mean, we talk about Canadian cars. There is no Canadian car. There's no you know, Canadian Flanagan car. It's a Ford or a Chevy, for God's sake. I mean, what am I, Mr. Lee? What am I missing?
Well, we do know that, you know, when they I think it was the Prime Minister of Ontario took one of Reagan's speeches and started to play it on the ads about tariffs.
Doug Ford, yeah.
the reaction from the current administration.
They pulled it.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. You know, I think that the one thing that I think they have stepped on themselves, as they do many times, is when they when what's his name, Lutnick met with the guy that owned the bridge in Michigan,
yeah.
You know, over Windsor, and so then they, you know, so then. He jawboned him because he was a big supporter and big contributor to Trump. And so Trump sent out this thing, it's not fair. When it turns out we agreed to everything and Canada was building it and we got half of it once they paid it off.
It's
the whole bridge thing is, I noticed that's kind of faded a little bit from the news.
Well, regardless of the theory on the tariffs, it's a tax. And if it's a tax, it's supposed to go through Congress. I mean, Mr. Flynn, I'll ask you, how many people on the MAGA side would vote tomorrow to just disband Congress and let Trump run the place? As scary as that would seem. I mean, what are we talking about here? Mitch McConnell said there's no doubt that the Supreme Court thing was accurate, that Congress is supposed to do the tariffs. Now, there's been some cutaways, but even now, the 15% tariff he put on over the weekend, first was 10, then it was 15 after he went to the can or something. Now, all of a sudden, that what is that? 150 days? 180 days? Is the now what happens after 180 days on that
Congress
one?
Congress has to approve it.
Yeah. So what happens
using,
on that one?
He's using a law that's in there that he can put it on for approximately 5 months. After that, Congress has to approve it, and going forward, he figured out that he knew he was going to get it. That's why they had it already.
Right. And this was all, you know, Plan B, and it was right, you know, all set to go, I think.
Well, but the plan is to be able to do stuff without Congress. In fact, it's a tax. And then
every president loves to do that, though.
Okay, but I mean, the idea being, we're talking billions of dollars. Now, my criticism of the Supreme Court in this is that I think they knew how they were going to rule 4 or 5 months ago.
Yeah, they sat up.
And they kind of, well, now, guess what? They're still charging tariffs this weekend.
Well, what I heard was that Roberts wanted to make it 7-2, and he couldn't get one of the last one.
The only one he would have gotten was Kavanaugh. Alito, first off, you know that Thomas will do whatever Alito tells him to do.
Thank God for Alito, because otherwise the other guy died, right, Scalia?
Yeah.
But all right, so John, what in the stage, Mr. Lee, and then we'll dig into Mr. Flanagan. In the stage of a project, what happens if all of a sudden at Accenture, when you got all these people essentially sitting on the bench? When I say the bench, as I've learned from Mr. Lee, the reason why I say the CBOE or some big organization, you have your IT department, and Kevin could talk about this more than I could, but you have your IT department. You don't really have anybody that comes to work every day and doesn't have a job to do, right? So if all of a sudden you decide you're going to change something that's got hundreds of thousands or millions of hours of other people, you can either sort of ramp up to do that yourself and say, okay, when we're done, we got to fire all these people, or you can go to one of these places that has, I can have 20 people there Monday morning, or 50, or 100, and that's what. So the people, they call it a bench, right, John? And
yep.
So there's people there. Matter of fact, our girl Annalisa, Alicia, she went to school during COVID, or she was online in school to do, she proofreads code or something, Jen? I don't know whatever the hell that does. But they worked for a firm, and they had a big job up at Baxter Labs for maybe 2 years. And all of a sudden, they were just gone, and everybody got fired. I mean, but now they weren't Baxter employees. So they went up, they did the job, and all of a sudden, they must have, what they do, Jen? They teach the Baxter people how to run the new system, and then they're just gone.
Well, no, because, basically what you're doing is, to implement a system, so you have 100 people in your IT department. If you want to implement a new system, you need another 50 people. So you can't staff up for that, obviously. And so, they use these integrators, systems integrators and consultants. They're organizations, they're smart enough to do this stuff. They don't have the manpower and who wants to add the headcount.
Then you got to fire them too, which is hard.
Yeah, so that's what happens. But no, your friend, and I think you and I were talking about this, I think it was Friday. She's in 6 months is a long time. That's a long time to be on the bench.
Yeah.
And I do think, I do know that when I was at Accenture, when I'd first made partner that year, and we lined up, we had a dip in the revenue. We lined up, and every fourth partner step forward, you're out. That's just the way it works. These companies have to be very cheerfully ruthless about handling their. So she's actually lucky that she's still employed there. 6 months is a long time to be on the bench unless she has a specific skill. That's when you start to call when you're at Accenture. You call.
What do? You sit home or you go to work and you sit there? What do you do?
Oh no, you go. You're in training. They'll put you in training and so forth. Okay. AI training or systems training or, industry training of some sort.
Army training, sir.
And again?
Army training, sir, like in the movie. Bill Murray and Stripes.
Stripes, yeah.
Go ahead.
So that's what they do. But no, my heart goes out to her because that's a very dangerous position to be in. And back in the day with Accenture, that's why you had to have great relationships with the people that really run the place or the managers, kind of like the NCOs in the military. And you need to have a really good relationship with the manager, the managers that you worked with before, or the partners or people like that that you could call late at night and say, I need a job. Can you what do you have on your project?
What do you do with that? This is probably a Flanny question. What do you do if the people who are actually working the jobs? Didn't you work on the air traffic control system in Turkey or something at one time or something like that? Or you were telling me about it? If somebody's working a job like that and all of a sudden the political world or all of a sudden it looks like it might be a war this week or something, somebody goes, all right, well, we're definitely going to do it, but how about we we do it a year from now or something. How devastating is that after you've been working the thing forever?
Well, it's a killer.
Well, I mean, you also have contractual T's and C's that if they decide, if you staff up and they decide to, you know, then you do get compensated for it. I mean, but you, if you delay a project a year, it basically means you start over. Because you can't, you don't have any of the same people. The people have all left.
Really? You know,
they've all moved to different projects.
That's got to be a nightmare.
Yeah, you're starting over almost.
What's the biggest project you were ever involved with?
It was the one in the UK I mentioned earlier. Half a billion.
Wow. And it was how many people for how long?
Oh, well, it ended up, we suited each other. And it was a couple hundred people, you know, including the people overseas. You know, but in, the other thing, too, is, you know, so we, you know, we waltz in. We were, you know, we used to be Anderson Consulting, and our nickname was Anderson Insulting.
Okay.
You know, we thought we were pretty, you know, pretty big in our britches. And so we walk in, and as I look back on it, the, you know, we were, we kind of were overbearing to the client as well. The, you know, and we could not get some of these systems over, partly because, you know, we, the client had kept changing executives. Okay, they had a lot of contractors themselves working for them, so they didn't have the long-term interest of the company, you know, in mind here. I mean, they were there for a job. So that project, that specific project, we eventually had to settle, and we walked away from it after about 4 or 5 years.
So it never really got done?
It got about halfway done.
Oh, God.
It got, you know, halfway to two-thirds done, but then it got very, very messy.
What is the difference between, like, what you guys, Accenture does, OMC, the big marketing firms, and what about my favorite guys used to come to Pullman and mess with me, the guys from the McKenzie? I always thought those guys were losers.
Their strategy. Okay, so their business valuation and strategy. I mean, Accenture did that too. It didn't have the cachet.
Well, me being the cynical knucklehead that I am, they would come over, the management, Mr. Flanagan, would give them carte blanche to interview, like, everybody in the company. So all the people in the company that management never listened to, that actually had pretty good ideas, they would pick everybody's brain and write up a report and say it was theirs. Remember that?
That was all the time.
What?
It's like, well, what's that Mike Nichols movie, Working Girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, happens all the time. And basically what they do is, it's even worse. Okay, so I tell you what, we're going to give you a cut rate, and anything that you, in, we'll help you implement it, and we get a percentage of the savings.
How does anybody calculate that?
Yeah. Well, you know, they hire real bright folks, and frankly, they overwhelm the existing people, the existing staff, because the existing staff, let's not forget, you're trying to do your job.
Yeah.
So you've got these real bright folks. This is all they do. This is what, you know, their focus right now is to find a savings in your company, and they're going to get paid on that. And here you're just trying to make sure that your accounting system is up. Who's going to win that battle?
Yeah,
they are.
Well, Mr. Flanagan, how do you watch these companies? I mean, our stocks are going down by the day. You wonder, are they survivable? I mean, they're going to survive in some level, but are dividends at risk? I mean, what are we talking here?
Well, something, you know, Kevin, I think, was talking about it last week about the turnover in CEOs and the average age.
Yeah.
And I saw something else. I meant to send it out last night to everybody, but I'm surprised there isn't a bigger shakeout, really, than there is in some ways, given how, you know, just tenuous everything seems to be. But I think that the CEO issue is something that shows there's turmoil inside a lot of these, you know, boards, and the companies are spooked enough, you know, to kind of, you know, change direction or, you know, change the admirals for the ship with greater frequency and to kind of take a bigger chance than they used to in the past, I think, when it came to promoting from inside, or, you know, headhunters looking outside. You know, they're going with younger and in some ways less tested people. But I think that that's a symptom of something that, you know, is likely to have a you know, gathering effect. I just think that there's a lot of uncertainties and, you know, how survivable this company is compared to the way it was 5 years ago, or everything around it. What's this competition going to be like? I think it's hard for companies to gauge this now, and I think they're trying to, like, you know, take a chance and go off the reservation a little bit, because they feel they need new thinking and solutions that, you know, are likely to be ones they wouldn't have come up with on their own, which is kind of a dangerous philosophy in a way.
Well, how about critiquing, this is going to come out weird, critiquing my mother, who's been dead for 18 years, and you can't really fight with her, although fighting with her was always tough. Her view of a lot of executives, of course, her view, how's this for a story? When she was very young, she and my aunt worked for the Quartermaster Corps during the war, World War II, which means they went out and procured stuff. And so my mother got somewhat of a odd view of the world. My aunt was in spaghetti, macaroni, and noodles. So she procured spaghetti, macaroni, and noodles essentially for the armed forces. My mother was in firing people and hiring people, whatever it was. There was longer names for it. And she was, she said they only fired a person once the whole time she was there, and they never hired anybody. But that was her job, and she had to be there every day. One guy they fired showed up to work with a gun, so they tossed him. She was in acquisition, well, it was in employ, I don't know, whatever you want to call it. There are two big words for it. And every Friday, there was a big corner office, and the generals would meet in there, and they would put a do not disturb sign on it. And everybody was convinced that that was the big high level meeting. She goes, they hired this kind of young, very, very not too bright secretary. And one day she goes and opens up the door, and there's a poker game going on. So, and her view of a lot of CEOs is they talk their way into this idea that they're way better than everybody else. That when push comes to shove, they're going to have the solution to a problem nobody else ever has. They get paid an awful lot of money on a daily basis. They don't really do anything. And all of a sudden, a crisis occurs, and they got nothing. And I just wonder, when Kevin was talking about all these CEOs, the amount of money these people get to take these jobs, the bonuses coming in and stuff in a lot of these places, you just wonder if they just hang until they actually reach a spot where they actually have to come up with something, and they just leave.
Well, and it also is like the Peter principle on steroids.
Yeah.
People are going to reach the level of their incompetence sooner rather than later, I suspect.
So, well, the lady from who was the lady? I'm going back a ways. The lady was supposed to save Hewlett-Packard. Was it the lady from?
What was her name?
Whitman, was it?
No, there was Christy.
Carly. No.
Fiorina.
Yeah.
Well, she. They didn't like the old CEO, and she was going.
You know, Marissa Meyer. Yeah.
Well, didn't the lady at Hewlett? The bonus she got to show up was more than the other guy had made in 10 years or something.
Yeah,
some incredible story.
Yeah, and I mean, she practically finished the company.
Yeah. Well, the lady, who was the one from...
I know HP pretty well here. What really screwed that company was when they bought Autonomy, for at the time, and I think it was an early kind of AI-type company, for $10 billion, and it turned out to be all fake. Is what it was. And the guy that did that was a German guy who went, was it Plattner? I can't remember. He was from SAP, because they thought, going back to your original point, they want the younger hip guy, the younger hip individual to run the company. And that's exactly what they got. And he goes out, and it turns out he was one of the Epstein class, everything that implies. And, so we're sitting there, and the company, spent a tremendous amount of money. Now, this is 30 years ago, and $10 billion was a lot of money back then.
Oh, yeah.
And it helped, it really helped the decline of the company. The company had to split everything off.
Well, the lady Yahoo was sort of the same way, right?
Was that?
Yeah. What was her name, Jimmy? You had it.
Marissa Meyer.
Oh, that's right.
Well, yeah, but before that, it was the one who's running HP Enterprises, or eBay, Meg Whitman.
Oh, yeah.
Meg Whitman.
Yeah, that's the one.
She was really smart. But I think, you know, my father was a number three man, and he had the three envelope principle. You know, you get hired, the first day you open up the envelope, I'm going to increase profits, we're going to, you know, go into new markets, stock price will go up. Things don't work well. You go to the second envelope, cut staff. Then if that does, and then things go wrong, you know what the third envelope was?
Get
prepare
out.
Three new envelopes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you have, you take a look at it. Disney, Eisner retired, Eisner came back because the other guy didn't know what he was doing. McDonald's notoriously still hires from internal candidates.
Yep.
They don't go from the outside. Then you have J.P. Morgan with Jamie Dimon. Now, they're going to have a problem when he wants to retire. Who is going to be? You got to have someone who knows banking. Can't bring in someone from the outside. Oh, great ideas, this or that. And I think you see that a lot with these tech firms. You know, Zuckerberg doesn't run Meta anymore.
You know, well, you wonder what the... you took a look at, I think, two of the biggest disasters. There's a million of them. I don't know what half these companies.
Well, Chief, if you want a disaster, look at Microsoft when they had Gates left, brought in Ballmer. Ballmer was an old Harvard MBA, run the company, this, that. That stock did almost nothing under his leadership.
For like a decade.
For a decade. He had no understanding of how to run a tech company.
It was $35 every day for a decade, pretty much.
And then they hired from someone who understands it. Stock's gone through the roof.
Well, you wonder what, you know, even though Jim Cramer loved the guy, the bozo they put in charge of Sears and Kmart. It basically, but you know, this the thing about, we talk about looking ahead, obviously, I talk to all the Johns all the time, and you look at, how could Sears, which was the first company in the world to understand that you had to make it convenient for people to buy even from home, how are they not leading the Amazon thing today? How could they forget where they came from?
Yeah.
Same way with eBay. I mean, Meg Whitman, was she making so much money? How did eBay give it all up to Amazon? And
they sold out.
Well, no, I mean mentally sold out. What I mean, they gave up PayPal. They gave up. What was the who's the other? There, you don't even go there for auctions anymore. What do you go to?
You go for some auctions, but eBay, you go.
But they never advanced. Meg Whitman just sold her stock and cashed a check every month.
Right.
Where was it? Where was any sort of forward thinking on the part of, what was the guy's name on Sears? You know, I'm talking about Cramer's buddy. The guy who came from Morgan Stanley or Goldman, that they thought it was a real estate empire. What was his name? Maybe that's Kevin Tony. Jimmy Lambert. Yeah.
Yeah, with executives that didn't see the trend.
Lambert.
What happened with Sears, my guess, is they were so in love with their real estate. I got that from that's got a lot of different meanings, as we know. I mean, they were so in love with the fact that you could go in and buy a Craftsman tool, that they didn't see the wave coming. Motorola, same thing happened to Motorola with digital technology and phones. Okay? They just didn't, you know, analog was just fine, and then Nokia came in, and it basically it destroyed the company. Yeah. You know, the world is littered with this stuff here. But Sears is a good one because there's one that should have, you know, if they had the... But then again, if you read how Bezos and his wife was just as involved as he was in running that company, is pretty interesting. You know, they were scrappy as scrappy could be. I mean, credit to them to start that place like that.
Gentlemen, I have to sign off for today, but good talking to you. So,
John, you got a dash?
Yeah, I'm gonna dash, but I'll be listening.
How you doing? All right. How you doing? Okay.
Yeah. 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 Thanks, Tom.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you. I'll call you later.
Yeah. Take care. Take care, John.
Thanks.
But you know, the world is littered with, you know, I mean, the ones that I can remember, that, you know, Motorola was the big, was the one that you just, you know, they would have had another life going forward here.
Well, they had a massive campus up in the northern suburb. In
Schaumburg.
Yep. But and the only thing left of them is, I think they do, they have some wireless, they have the radio business, the military.
They do, and they also have the satellites. But again, this is just like anything in history, people rest on their laurels. As you mentioned, Bezos was working for a Wall Street firm and figured out the ability to sell on the internet was almost infinity. And that he came up, well, what would be the one product to sell? Books. But he always knew that he was going to be selling more than books down the road. But you have to start somewhere. And that's why he could start it. And you're right. His wife helped him, and they got a loan from his father and ran it out of the garage. But he figured out what the power of the internet was before anyone else.
Well,
Sears didn't.
But it's not... I'm going to back up a hair. It's not about the power of the internet. It's the power of being somebody being able to buy your stuff from... If you're on a farm, you're not going to make it to the Sears store in Chicago. They figured that out in 1880, for God's sake.
Yeah, they did, but then they rested on
their laurels. Yeah, somehow or another they forgot what they are.
They rested on their laurels.
Anyway.
But the other thing, too, is how much of their business is made up of Amazon Web Services, the cloud business? And I think
let's be clear, because people might not agree with me. Let's be clear. They, I don't know if they paid off politicians or whatever. They got the people that were doing online sales.
Yep.
They got there because they didn't have to pay taxes. Because for some,
that's exactly right.
Absolutely.
And I don't understand. Stores. I don't understand how. I mean, I remember. That was never a Best Buy.
The reasoning was, let's get this digital technology up and going here.
No, the reason was, people never paid it, and it was never enforced.
Yep.
And I don't know why it was never enforced. Was it the governor or the police chief's wife doing all this buying or what? I mean, what I'm talking about here is that you could walk into a, I mean, I was not a big Best Buy guy, but I could walk in there and I actually see people. And well, this is when you first started to be able to get stuff on your phones. Guys, or they would call home and they'd say, I'm looking at a Sony. Boy, talk about my age. Look at a Sony TV. Looks like a 35-incher. It's $800. The guy'd call home, and the wife would say, or whatever, a buddy at home would say, man, looks to me like I can buy that thing on Amazon, even the same price, and we don't have to pay any taxes. Well, the problem is the Best Buy is in a building on a city block where they're paying taxes.
Right,
not only sales tax, they're paying property tax, they're paying everything else. And you're going to let these other idiots, and the weird part, I mean, I'll bet you could go to a saloon, tavern, whatever you want to call it, library, interview people and say, do you have to pay tax online? Well, now they're going to say most of the time, but you really don't. If the fact is, you owe it. I've had this argument with several people. No, I don't. Well, yeah, you do. And that's what sent the one guy to jail, right? I mean, I actually went online to check this after everybody disagreed with me. Everything you buy out of state, if you don't pay tax there, theoretically, if you bought something from Indiana and you paid, I don't know what Indiana sales tax is, if you pay 5% and it's imported here, and Illinois is like 8, you owe Illinois 3. You don't think you do, but you do. And over a certain number, you're supposed to file quarterly. So I to this day, I have no idea why. I mean, it's not. I don't like to make people pay taxes. Why a governor hasn't said to Amazon, and you know, whether they have to go to court, give me the top 200 people that bought crap at Amazon last year. Not last year, because now you pretty much have to pay, because Amazon has a. The deal was, if the company had a brick and mortar of anything in the state, you had to pay. Well, Amazon didn't, like, forever. And even now, I think, I'm not positive on this, I think if you go to Amazon and you buy, say, a camera from John Lee Camera in Rapid City, South Dakota, and it comes right to your house, I don't think in that transaction you pay, they collect sales tax. I'm not positive.
They do.
Don't think they do.
They do. I just bought some from a third party.
Okay, if it comes through the Amazon distribution system, you guys are absolutely correct. I'm not. If it comes directly from them, and Amazon is just the gets a little spiffed or 2% or 5% for doing it, that I think is still carved out.
No, everything I've ever bought, and I buy shit like everybody, but no, everything I've purchased has always had tax put on it, sales tax.
I think you're right. In the last, and just about everything we buy, I don't do this, but Audrey buys it all the time.
And I think that's in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, but I there was a carve out because there was a bitch when everybody started doing this, when they actually started collecting all this stuff. I think there's still a carve out that if it's a total third party, they don't collect it.
If it's a used product, they don't collect. But I mean, I bought from individual companies. I mean, I primarily buy film for cameras, because I'm still an analog photographer. And I buy it from various places out there. And I buy it from B&H directly, and I'm paying tax.
Okay, I mean, this may have changed but I'm still not sure that there are some stuff through there, and maybe just only 1% now, that you could buy something from a place and then Amazon never touches it. I think they pretty much touch everything now, though. But if the guy in North Dakota put it in the mail and sent it to your house, I'm not sure you pay. He collects.
Yeah, I think it depends.
Well, like I said, used products, I don't think are taxed.
Well, no, I think John's right on that. But I think if it's a new product and I buy it from someone in North Dakota or North Carolina, I think they have to pay the North Carolina tax because they have a physical presence.
No, they don't.
No, they pay. Well, I don't know. I don't know where the tax goes.
I know coming on my side because I've done it. On Amazon, I pay a tax. I pay the Illinois tax because Amazon does have physical locations. They're called.
You buy a car out of state?
Whole Foods.
You buy a car out of state? You don't have. You can elect. I've done this several times. Let's say, matter of fact, I bought a car in Arizona. Say their sales tax was 4% or 5%. I could have elected to pay Arizona the 4 or 5, and then back here when I titled it, paid Illinois the difference. But if I elected, I just told Arizona I'm not paying you anything. I'm just going to pay it to Illinois. And there's a piece of paper you get when you go to title it here, and they tell you how much you owe. It's weird. That's why, get a load of this. One of the guys before I worked at Pullman, I worked for Allied Van Lines, right? And this guy went to Oregon. He had a deal where you could have a post office box and title your car in Oregon. So this guy, remember they were made by Fiat. Remember the Elantra, John?
Yeah.
This guy bought a Elantra Beta stick shift, nice car, but of course, as soon as it saw rust, it disappeared. So he buys this thing from Oregon. And he comes here, tries to have it titled. They wanted the full sales tax on the original purchase price because nobody had ever paid it. If you registered your car in Oregon, you never had to pay sales tax.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you can't do that anymore, but. So he goes, he ended up keeping the post office box in Oregon. State of Illinois wanted the full, like, 7% on, like, a $20,000 car. And the guy goes, he paid, like, $3,000 for it. But, I mean, here, I mean, Jimmy, you pay tax on a used car like it's new. If they sell the same car 20 times, they get paid tax 20 times. It's a great deal. Anyway, so I guess back to the kind of the theme here. What if anything, there's always political stuff going on. What, if anything, is the current stuff causing people to not, to delay decisions? And the second part is, I mean, in the midst of the market here, if you look at the averages, even though we're down today, we're down 30 in the S&P, is down 144 in the NASDAQ. If you look at the averages, we're still not that far down. But for the first time, really, and Jimmy and I talked about this the other day, for the first time, you can't just look at the Magnificent Seven and say, oh, they're all tech. The movement of stocks within the Magnificent Seven is dramatic, or in anything you consider tech. I mean, Micron's not in the Magnificent Seven, but I'm sure people would say it's one of the top 10 tech firms, same way with Oracle. But mean, I've seen Microsoft has gone from, I mean, we have a lot of this, and our clients have a lot of this. I'm looking at the chart. Stock's 395 down again this morning. Last, and we're not talking a long time ago, October was 542. Ouch. We're talking Micron. Well, no, Micron's the other way. Now, Micron is, I mean, you would think you got to be real careful about which stock you buy here. Micron in October was, we'll say October 13th was $192. Now it's $423. That's a number. The other one, Oracle, that was supposed to do everything because Trump's kids, buddies with Ellison's kids, and they're going to get TikTok and all this other crap. Last, when all that happened, was in September. Stock topped out roughly at 328. It's now 146.
This is Oracle.
Yeah. I mean, what exactly, I mean, Jan, you know, we are more in this height. What is going on in the individual? Is it all AI or is it not AI? I mean, NVIDIA obviously still
doing it. I was talking to.
By the way, Amazon was down what, 20 days in a row?
Yeah. Accenture, I can only talk about Accenture here, and I'm pretty familiar with it. And that is that everyone is waiting for the AI. You know, enterprise AI is not coming online. Maybe departmental is, and consumer certainly is. Okay? That's the first thing. Second is, you know, people have stopped, you know, the major programs. Okay, this Doge thing had a big impact on the Accenture, that from a not from a financial standpoint, but from a mentality standpoint, people said, whoa. So, you know, the government, when they started to cut that back, even if it was not even statistically significant, that had a big impact as well. So then that's when you had to start.
How much of Accenture's business would govern?
They've seen a real reduction in large enterprise projects for, you know, the geopolitical, and I'm going to include tariffs in that geopolitical thing too. I mean, where am I, you know, yeah, I'll spend money to improve my own internal systems. You know, if I have three old systems, I need to move them into a new system. Sure, I'll do that. But to expand out into a new market, you know, to put a system, to future-proof my company, you know, to put a new system into future-proof, I'm going to think twice about that. Good enough is good enough with what you have. That's what I'm seeing.
Jen, is there any, I don't know if you're not the tax guy, I think the answer is no, but is there no tariff on services? I don't think there is.
I'm not aware of a tariff on services.
So if PTI...
Don't forget one thing about services, Tom. It's all these companies, they have, it's like Accenture has delivery centers in the Philippines and Argentina, India, obviously, and so around the world. But it's coming through Accenture.
Right.
So that's really per se not an import.
Well, I guess I think the answer is no here, but I wonder, I don't want to say too loud for somebody might decide. What if, you know, if PTI for some reason, I don't know, I wouldn't want to do this, all of a sudden we had like 80 people working here and we became some massive firm, which I wouldn't want to do, but if we did, and all of a sudden we decide, okay, we're gonna out our call center, where you're gonna, the two people that pick up the phone are gonna be like in India or something. So we're buying this call center service, and we're paying, you know, $15,000 a month for it or something. Well, how is that any different than buying, you know, Saffron or whatever the hell we're buying from India? I mean, I don't get the difference, but I don't think we pay a tariff on the service, do we?
No, I don't think so.
Kind of wonder why. I don't want to, but...
Well, that would hurt us a lot more than it would hurt anybody else.
Well,
we're an exporter of services.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing if you buy cocoa from someplace, you put a tariff on it, what's the difference? You're not hurting them, you're hurting us. Which disagrees me with the Secretary of the Treasury, but that's okay.
What do they call it? What's the name of the secretary? Is it Lutnick?
It's Hassert. Hassert.
Okay, Bass.
Oh, is it? What's one? Hassert's one of them is economic advisors. The other one is
Bessett is Secretary of the Treasury.
Bessett, oh, he's Secretary, and Hassert's the economic advisor guy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And Miller is what? We don't know what he does. He just runs the place.
Lutnick is the Commerce Secretary.
How has he still got his job after this Epstein stuff?
You mean Butler? Okay, yeah.
Lutnick.
Sorry.
Very simple. I pledge my allegiance to the right guy.
Yeah.
Pledge allegiance. That's a disgrace.
Yeah.
It's absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of funny. I used to watch the cartoon The Simpsons, and the way they're, you know, the big nuclear plant or the nuclear plant that Homer Simpson worked at was run by Mr. Burns. And Mr. Burns basically, it's funny how it mimics Trump.
Okay.
He really, Burns thinks that he runs the whole thing, this or that. People, oh, Mr. Burns, we're going to come on legal action. Well, I'm going to hit my button. I have 12 high-paid lawyers. Good luck.
Yeah.
You know, I'll sue you. I'll do this. I'll do that. And, you know, they have, it was just hilarious that it works that way. And they had, like, the regulators come in and, you know, you could have what's in the box or behind the curtain where Mr. Smithers is, just bribery. And now you look at it and, yeah, that's exactly what is going on.
Well, Mr. Lee, we've had one of the gentlemen on the show, Wayne, is writing a book regarding the Epstein stuff, and I talk about this every week, but it's not about, you know, everybody else is covering the young girl part. It's not about that. It's about how far it went back and how the people there, it was a spot where you traded essentially ideas and whatever. I mean, that if you wanted to do money laundering, you went through Epstein. He was like the expert on money laundering, and he knew all these people. Do you think the scandal will ever make it there? Will we ever find out what, say, the CIA's role is, either in ignoring the other people from other countries being here, or not knowing, or participating? Are we ever going to find any of that out? I think the answer is probably no.
Well, I have to say that, somebody made a comment, which, you know, I'm going to answer your question. You know, no one gave a shit when Biden was here. Which kind of makes me wonder, why not? Why not? I mean, I am so disillusioned with, and I'm so disgusted with how our political class and the Epstein, whatever they call the Epstein class, you know, how we're just letting them skate away with this shit. So the answer to your question is, you know, look, I think my frustration, everybody shares that. Some people want it to go away, but I just don't think this is going to go away.
We have an attention span. We have an attention span of like next to nothing. I was at my brother's yesterday for dinner, and one of the guy who used to play softball, but I haven't seen in ages. He works for some firm. Boy, I don't want to say what he was telling me on the air regarding his firm and stuff that goes into food we eat, but. He was talking about how they in class now, even in movie in classes where they're teaching drama and movies, that you can't get people to watch the whole movie. The attention span is so much less. And Trump is very good at this. He knows that. The more he can talk about other stuff, the more this is going to fall on the back burner. The only problem is this one keeps percolating up because people keep going to Congress and having new names and so forth, but and I listened to a politician or somebody on YouTube talking about we always do this in this country to that class. When Richard Nixon left, Ford pardoned him because he wanted to, you know, stop the embarrassment. But it's not stopping the embarrassment. It's making sure people never actually get their heel at some level, unless you really mess up or piss off the right person. You never actually get any kind of consequence to your actions. Now, not just Nixon, but all the people around him, never a couple of guys sort of went to jail, but never really found out who. Yeah, and Iran-Contra people never went to jail. That was way worse. I mean, none of those guys ever went anywhere, did they? I mean,
Who did? Who didn't?
The Iran-Contra people.
Oh, the Iran-Contra.
And Wayne's point is the same people we're talking about with Epstein, the Maxwells of the world and those kinds of people, the dad, they were all involved in Iran-Contra.
I mean, my sense is that it was a, you know, I'm very surprised that he wasn't smart enough to get over to Israel, you know, when the shit hit the fan. You know, and Ghislaine Maxwell, I think, was supposed to get over to France. But no, and I'm not sure that the CIA was. I think this was more. I think he was so involved with Israeli intelligence. But then again, at that level, they all are.
Okay, but again, the question, the honest question for the show, which is worse? If the CIA was so dumb they didn't realize that everybody else was here doing this stuff, Russia and everybody else, or getting somehow involved, or we think they were, or they either didn't know, which is pretty awful, or they did know. Which is worse? Which would you rather have? A politician who doesn't know what's going on or is crooked enough to be in it? I don't know which is worse. You want somebody that dumb or you want somebody that crooked?
Yeah. But, you know, his... Would he really be on the CIA's radar?
Oh, God, yeah.
He's written out... Let me just finish. I mean, he's running around basically, you know, currying favors and trading favors with primarily people in the United States. You know, in his international, I don't know. It's just
if you look at him.
I mean, FBI, yes, I would
agree.
Okay,
but if you look at him on somewhat of a shallow level, not saying that you're being shallow with this. This is what Wayne's going back to. He starts with Ghislaine Maxwell's father.
Oh yeah.
And what's his name? Barr's father with the school. Barr's father was in the British Secret Service.
No, that was Maxwell's.
No, Maxwell's guy was, he was in the Czechoslovakian something, then he became tight with Mossad, and then he got hooked up with British. He could have been like a triple agent. But I'm saying that for the CIA not to have any idea who that guy was is unconscionable to me, that he somehow was connected to all these people.
Well, I think so, but John's kind of right. He was asking for favors.
I'm saying, where did this all come from? The idea that the people from Saudi are coming over here and doing God knows what. And who has the list of the people from Saudi that were here with drinking they're not supposed to if they're Muslim, messing around with little girls which they're not supposed to, and who knows, eating shrimp, I don't know if you're supposed to eat. What's the tab for those? I mean, who are these people? Who's got the Rolodex of the people that were here and who's got the goods on them? I mean, somebody's got it. I don't think it's all in these million... I mean, is it Maxwell have it someplace? I mean, this goes back... We're talking, this is in the 40s these guys were around. And the same people, Wayne says, that were involved in some of the Iran-Contra were these guys, the people that were involved in this group. They never seem... Nobody ever seems to get at them. Now it looks like we're not going to get at them again. I guess... You know, we used to think it was the Nixons or the Cabots and the Lodges that ran them. What it does, Mr. Lee and Mr. Lawler, it tells you that, yes, there is an upper echelon of something here that seems to run the place, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, this is why, you know, I made the comment, I think the latest phrase was the Epstein class.
Yeah.
It's like, what, you know, what? I'm so disgusted, I can't even talk about it.
Well, how would anybody, the guy who's the Secretary of Commerce, how would you end up, show up at this guy's island with your family and your nannies when the guy's a registered sex offender? Anyway, we're going to go break when Nancy will pile in. John, you can hang around if you want. We'll talk some real estate, but Nancy's always good to talk to. SP Futures down 27, NASDAQ Futures down 138. We'll have a full report here in a second. And then we'll get Nancy. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy, Ricky on the board, Jimmy and the officer. SP Futures down 26, NASDAQ Futures down 129. We were down more than that last night, but that's where we are right now over in Europe. We've got the DAX down 134.5%, so not that much. FTSE actually up 10, call that flat. heck around down one, call that fast. So not much of a big reaction. Europe down a little bit. Asia, Nikkei down 642. That's 1.1%. Hang Seng up 666, 2.5%. That's a huge move. And Shanghai is still not open because of the Chinese New Year. They've been closed since the 13th. It's kind of a ways. Year of the horse, if you don't know that. I'm not a horse. Our friend Audrey is a horse. I'm not so sure what Nancy is. We'll find out here in a second. Bonds, 10-year down 2 base points, 4.06. These guys have been really stable, these bond prices. The Bund unchanged, 273. Japan unchanged at 2.12. Oil up 20 cents, 66.68. So the new range here looks like around maybe 64 to 67 or 68 here. It was 57 to 61 for a while. So oil is up. A lot of that due probably to the simmering tensions in the Middle East. Brent up 14 cents, 71.70. Gold, big move this morning, up $92, 51.73, so way past 5,000. Silver up 430, 86.65. Again, it's a big price for silver. Foreign exchange, dollar flat, which we've got the euro at 117.96, which is, you know, it's pretty high for the euro recently anyway. British pound, 1.35 exactly, so they're up pretty high. Crypto down $1,100, 66,243. I think it traded under 65,000 last night, so Bitcoin was 70, flew down to 60, or was down to 60, went up to 70, now it's kind of lurking in the middle. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 here in Chicago. We're looking at 22 degrees right now with a high of 29. A couple of morning flurries going on right now, otherwise windy and chilly with times of sun and clouds. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 24 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 54 degrees right now with a high of 86. Sunny to partly cloudy and warm. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 53 degrees. For traffic in Chicago, keep it simple for you. There's mild to heavy traffic inbound on most directions. We're looking at 21 minutes from Kennedy, 34 from Edens, 32 minutes from Eisenhower, 24 from Dan Ryan, and finally 35 from Stevenson. Sports real quick, spring training has started for the MLB. Yesterday we saw the White Sox beat Brewers 5-2 and the Cubs lose to Giants 4-2. NHL is back on this Wednesday, February 25, and the U.S. men's hockey team won the Olympic gold medal after beating Canada 2-1, ending a 46-year drought for the team with this being the first gold since 1980. Finally, for sports, for the NBA, we got Bulls losing to Knicks 105-99. Now for at a 9-loss streak and 12th in East Conference. Finally, Suns lose to Trailblazers 92-77. They sit at number 7 of Western Conference. Back over to you guys.
Hey, Jimmy, I got a question. They said it's our third gold medal in hockey. The last was in 1980. When was the one before?
Sun Valley 1960.
Really? Mm-hmm. I think one of the guys I knew from, one of my guys that taught me a hell of a lot, a guy named Wally Kilray, I think he was an Olympic hockey player. I think he was 56, though.
Wally? Yeah. Did he?
Yeah, I think he was an Olympic hockey player.
Was he that much older than us?
I think so.
Jeez, okay.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, of course.
When I knew him, I was 28.
And so I knew I was 23.
So he was probably
and,
60.
He had to be, 45 or 50? 55,
yeah, at least 50, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
But I don't think he won a gold medal. We'd have known that. So it must have been before that. Anyway. Do we have Nancy?
Yeah, we do.
Hey,
do you know who we beat to get the 1980 gold?
Yeah, I watched it. The Russians.
No.
No, it was Finland.
Finland.
Well, that's right. We beat the Russians in the semifinal. That's right.
Well, isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
I always thought it was Russia too, and then yesterday I was like, what?
"Well, the big game was Russia.
The Russia game.
Yeah,
that was really something.
That was the semifinals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Finland was better than us too. I mean, they had some pros on that team, right?
Not then.
But they weren't bad. I mean, they were pretty good. They were. I mean, as an amateur team, we didn't walk all over Finland. No way. I don't think. Well, you are correct, Nance.
Everybody was so happy.
Yeah, are you excited to take the South Shore down to watch the Bears in their new stadium in Hammond?
No. Absolutely not. You know, I got a survey from the Bears. Did you guys get a survey from the Bears?
No, but no. Our buddy Shanahan called me yesterday. and said that he got the ticket, his increase in he's a season ticket holder, and they told him that the market made him do it or something like that. Like, what does that mean?
Who knows? But the survey was very good. They asked how you felt about them moving there. They asked a lot of good questions. They said, if we could build the ultimate stadium, what would you want to see in it? And then they had you rate things from like 1 to 10. You know, you had what's the most important to the least important. You had to put numbers on everything. It was actually intelligent for, you know, Chicago. Oh. It's wild.
Well, here it is. The missive from the Bears: through detailed analysis and market research, we will implement an average increase of 13.5% in our season ticket packages for 2026. There you go.
I hate to tell you, the majority of the Bears season ticket holders, I think, are more from the north side.
Yeah.
And I don't see any of those people driving down to Hammond to get there. So they're cutting off their nose to spite their face.
Nance, you've been in real estate for a long time, even though you're only 25.
24.
There you go. Sorry. Do you think if anybody who wrote a 20 or 25 year lease with no escalation in it, in other words, I mean, they did the math on the way in. I was going to pick Jimmy up. They have 60,000 seats, say, and mm-hmm. let's say their average ticket price is $100, which I know is real light because they get like $2,500 for the ones in the skybox. Let's say $100. So that's mm-hmm. $6 million a game by my math, right? 60,000 times 100. All right, so if you add up, so 13% on that, which is what? It's basically almost $1 million, right? 900,000 times 10 is $9 million. So the increase this year is 1.5 times the total rent. And we think these guys deserve something.
Well, this is what gets me is, you know, if the state of Indiana, which they will have to do sooner or later, wants to, you know, fund these guys, and Indiana's been pretty smart about bringing businesses in. There was a very good article, actually in the Wall Street Journal again,
up until now,
about how they've encouraged businesses to come in. But, you know, the Bears have, first, no one trusts them because they have changed it so many times. Who am I going to bring to the dance? So, you know, they go to Hammond. Okay, well, you know, will people watch them here? Well, I'm sure they will. But, you know, would they have watched them 2 years ago if they were in Hammond? I don't think so.
No.
Nance, do you think the skybox, a lot of that's political. You know, you're bringing. Do you think the skybox people travel to him or Portage? I don't think they travel.
I don't think Indiana. I have nothing against Indiana or anything like that. I'm just saying the tradition was they're the Chicago Bears. You have a lot of heavy money invested in marketing and strategies where people, you know, businesses buy these tickets and give them to their customers.
Yep.
And you're going to see a lot of this stuff get all messed up. And I believe the state, the political ramifications from this are going to hurt as well. It's just one more thing leaving, you know.
Can you think of any person you've ever met in your life, in business or in real estate? Not that that's not business. That is dumb enough to have a fixed rent for 20 years when the income can quadruple.
No, I don't understand that. That doesn't calculate with what I see every day.
No, it doesn't even begin to. So, Nance, what's going on? You haven't been on in a bit because we had a couple Mondays off, and an Audrey was on. What's going on in your world? What is this? I went to the home show yesterday with Audrey.
How was that yesterday?
You know, a lot of people said that they were doing fine. Of course, that's what you do at a show, but the guy selling the coffee cakes was doing good. The guy selling the Cutco knives. But there's a lot of people with porches, a lot of three-season rooms, some stuff that was kind of neat. One guy had those pergola things that I was never big on. Because,
yes.
Well, one guy had one where you hit a button and the thing closes.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. But they're pretty neat stuff. If you have three-season room, they have windows that are in four spots where you either put on the bottom, you almost don't have a window, where it looks like it's wide open. But everybody, you know, I talked to a few people. Of course, Audrey talks to everybody, right? I'm a bit, took hardly get her out of there. Plus, she had somebody doing some stuff, or somebody was doing something for your eyes where you could get rid of wrinkles. The lady does.
Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, so your friend talks to me and to get done one eye, and the lady goes, hey, it looks like it makes you look 20 years younger. I go, you better go for 30, was my comment. But anyway,
So Nancy, I got an important question for you.
Yes, sir.
All right. We've got 1.5 acres out in Crystal Lake. It's got two ponds. And one's a relatively small, one's a relatively large pond. They're the biggest pain. I mean, they are the bane of my existence. Are they
bane
worth
it? Bane or pain?
They are both. They're the bane and the pain of my existence.
Okay.
Damn things are always dirty, even when you clean them. Are they worth anything on the real estate? Or can I just fill it in and make it into a rock garden?
There, I'll fill it in and make it into the rock garden.
Yeah.
I'm not attracted to necessarily living by, you know, the water. I don't think that to me is like one of the most dangerous.
Yeah, so these aren't pond ponds. These are decorative ponds.
These are
decorative. I know. But I don't think people really are into it when they're looking at anything. They're just not.
Okay.
But I if you asked Audrey, I'm sure she would say they have a lot of value.
Why don't you get some zebra mussels and throw them in there? It'll clean it up for you.
Nothing cleans these things up. They're dirt vacuums is what they are.
It's funny to hear you say that because that's how I look at them. I've seen, you know, ponds and homes that we've been trying to sell, and it's really difficult to keep them clean.
Oh,
when you've got water flowing through them and you got like little, you know, music stage to it, it's beautiful, right? But it just doesn't stay like that.
Nope. No, I mean, I'm living. Let me tell you, I can talk to you offline about that. I'm just curious. Does it add anything to the real estate or take it away, or is it just there?
I think it's just personal preference, and for some people, it's great, and other people it's not. And you know, for me, it would be a turnoff because I would just say, "Oh, here's another thing I got to take care of. Everything you buy, you must take care of."
Yep.
A lot of people don't do that, but if you take that philosophy and you're really going to take care of it, you've got, you know, that's a lot of work.
Well, that's it's every 2 to 3 weeks you're out there.
I believe you.
Anyways, well, that was my big question. Sorry to hijack.
You need a very powerful wash that it goes through the water. Anyway, but Nancy asked me, I think that this place was in Tinley Park, so say the Tinlin, Orland, that whole area out there. An awful lot of the housing stock is pushing 20, 30, 40, 45 years, right? Nancy's kind of the. So
yeah.
So you're going to see people with decks, even if you take care of it, you know, 20, 30 years, probably the wood has to be replaced. A boatload of windows, bathrooms, kitchens, and decks, just like you would expect with the housing stock. And I think everybody was getting people to come out and get estimates this week. You know, even if it's just for research, every person I talked to said they were having a really good show, a bunch of names. And it doesn't mean people are going to buy. Maybe they just have some kind of idea. But like Audrey said, you know, despite, you know, President whatever telling us there's no inflation, Audrey claims that the price in the last 5 years, the price of windows is up at least three times.
And, the price of what?
Windows.
Windows.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And
yep,
that's true.
And I'm going to say roofs probably aren't far behind, but everything is in that stage where people's kitchen, they're at least thinking about it, and there's all kinds of people. Some young lady was telling me, "No, we leave the cabinets and everything in place, we replace all the doors and all the hinges so they look like they're new." There's somebody else who they'll do the floor. Somebody else, a lot of three season rooms, all kinds where people, and it really, all I kept thinking about was our lovely lady who does mortgages, and I'm sitting there, a lot of this stuff is happening because people have 3% mortgages and can't move, and it, Kathy was telling us about her nephew who's putting the big addition on in Mount Greenwood, you know, and that was the beauty. I don't know how well you know the Beverly area, Nancy. I know Jen and Jimmy don't at all, but The beauty of the Beverly area, I mean, if you drive around, somebody points it out to you, you might not think it. Every sort of block or two has sort of different sized houses. I mean, there's you know, a block where the houses aren't very big, then there's one where a little bit bigger, then there's blocks where they're gorgeous. I mean, not just, they're much bigger. The area, once you moved in, you never had to leave. Where if you had the three-bedroom, one-bathroom house, and all of a sudden, you know, you pop out two kids, you could sell that place, go to the next block, and find one with four bedrooms and two bathrooms, and stay in the hood. And back, you weren't, you know, the mortgages might have been the same value, so you weren't losing anything there. You know, you maybe, whatever you, the cost of, I'll use the term, to flip, was never, and then there were bigger, so you never had to move more than three or four blocks as your family grew. Well, now, people can't do that, can they, Nance? Because of the 3% mortgage hangover. But I think these places are doing pretty well. I mean, we're going to put a three-season room on. We're going to put a deck on. We're going to do something to make this place look bigger, even though it's not, because now we got an extra couple of people. I mean, am I wrong or right on that? It seems like that's where all the pressure is in some of these areas.
You know, what I think is going to happen off the show is, and this is just from what I do for a living, all the people who have these ideas, they get the quote, and then it just sits because you really have no way of paying for that.
Okay.
We're a society that, you know, makes monthly payments.
Yeah.
And these people do not have the ability to shell out $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in a, I mean, they just don't. And there's no financing for it.
What did Kathy say to the nephews talking about the addition in Mount Greenwood? $200,000?
Yeah.
That's a number.
$200,000. But there you're actually changing the shape of the home and all of that. So that's, you know, financeable. But just because you decide to put in new windows, that's not a financed product. It's sad, but it's true. I mean, the most you can do is go get a line of credit. And those, I think, right now are going off. Probably because everyone has a floor in those now. Back in the day, there were never any floors because no one ever thought the interest rate could get that low. And so I think the floors are about 4-4.5%, meaning the loan could never go lower than that. And then they all add on to whatever the prime rate is. And I think I saw yesterday it was 7.13%. So it's all fine and good to just pay your 7% interest, but those are balloon notes. And when they come due, a lot of people get in trouble on those.
So you're saying that the incidence of people, especially if you've got a growing family, of being able to write the $80,000 check for the new two bedrooms and bathroom is pretty much zero.
Zero. Zero. And it's not good.
They're better off just buying, going further out. Going further,
right.
Getting a house and
Yeah, but you can't dump your 3% mortgage and pick up a 6. That's a big hit.
It is a big hit. It's a big hit. I've got somebody right now who wants to do that, come back from Indiana.
Well, you were saying that a lot of people that are doing it because they're wrapping their credit card bills back in the house, so the 6% is better.
People have an out, but you can't. I mean, when you start putting $30,000 on a credit card, I mean, that is not the best idea in the world. But, I mean, people will do it, but I think the home shows give people ideas, and I think it gives them hope.
Yeah.
I think it's great. But the percentage of people that will actually do it, not too much. And people are doing, replacing, like, let's say you have, you know, your house is 40 years old, right? The most I've seen people do in replacing windows is like maybe, like the worst first. Okay,
yeah.
So maybe you take a bedroom and there's two or three windows in a bedroom too, let's say. I mean, they're replacing just that. And then they just keep every year trying to smack in another two. That's it. People, I mean, like when I replaced my windows in my house, I did them all at once. But that's gone. Those days are over.
Well, let me tell you, I've got a house that in 1920s, we rebuilt it in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
Added on to it. I mean, wonderful house. Tom's been there many times. And now, I mean, that's 20 years. Okay, 25 mm-hmm. years almost, and every piece of wood has got to be replaced. on, because, you know, my brother-in-law, who was a real craftsman, just, you know, built a pergola that, you know, when I have nightmares, I want to cut it down. But, you know, there's a lot of woodwork on the outside. That is expensive. That is a tremendous amount of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, what, I know if I have this conversation with Aud, I mean, she's always so positive about the world going forward. And I always wonder, because I've seen times when it hasn't been positive. Plus, you know, to be blunt, that's my job for my clients, is to do the worrying for them, right? So they don't have to. And so that's, you know, you got to do that, right? But
that's right.
But I just wonder what you're, when you say what you've been saying, Nance, it really is a massive, and this thing really concerns me, and I don't know what I can do about it, but the difference between people's financial health is, if they've done very well, it's not because they have a job that's paying them $100 a week and they're living on 80 and saving 20. That is, you know, that's gone the way of the dodo bird. Not for everybody, but for most people. But you have this wealth, I'll use the term bubble, accretion from stocks and houses that, you know, it's not just the rich have stock. An awful lot of people have 401ks and so forth. And people make investment decisions based sort of on their wealth, where somebody might decide to buy all their windows and get a loan because their, you know, their 401k plan or their IRA is, you know, $500,000 or something. And they you come to count on that. And even though it's not necessarily leverage, it's sort of like somebody who might take out a second mortgage for like Bitcoin. Well, you didn't take out the loan at Robinhood for Bitcoin, but you're somehow leveraged with it. Or somebody who may go out and buy the $80,000 new pickup because their IRA is, you know, got $400,000 in it, and that's their fallback position. What if, boy, I hope this doesn't happen, I'm not predicting it happen, what if the market were to take a 30-40% slide, which a lot of stocks that, you know, my clients have here have, and a lot of stocks have gone back way up too, so, but there have been stocks. What if the market were to take a 30-40% hit and houses were to drop 15-20%? What, the leverage is not just in the leverage here at PTI or whatever that you might, we don't have a lot of people do that, but they might have a stock loan or something. It's not just, I think the leverage is all over the place, Nance, and when you talk without even knowing it, you're reinforcing that view.
You know, Tom, I think we were there like in 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
And the government stepped in and gave all these people 2% loans. And now these same people are probably in their 60s, and they're telling me that they've got, you know, they've got 2% loans, right? And right, all that non-payment was added to the back end of the loan. And on these 2% loans, in a lot of cases, they went from a 30 to 40 year payback. Okay. And these same people that I know did this, just from, you know, the amount of customers I have over time that have called, they are saying to me now, like, you know, because they're in a different situation, things are a lot better. And they're saying, boy, you know, I can't wait to retire. And then we're going to sell our house, we're going to take that money, and we're going to go down south, and we're going to get this, and we're going to get that. And I'm like, you don't even realize how much you have to pay off for your house. They have no conception.
They still have a mortgage on their house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then they don't realize.
They've been in the house for 30 years?
At least 20, 25. And all they did was, you know, all that happened, which is the unwritten that people don't even realize, is during that 2008 to 2012 stretch, these people just modified the back end of their loans. Then COVID came, and they're modifying the back ends of their loan, and they're telling me how much they're going to, when they retire, they're going to do this and they're going to do that. And I'm thinking to myself, you don't have any concept that you're underwater on your house.
So they still have a balloon. They still have a balloon, is what you're saying.
They gave them a 40-year mortgage. Most of these are added on a 40-year mortgage, or they keep adding on. I know somebody like 4 or 5 years in a row modified and added the debt that they didn't pay for that year back into the back end of their loan. And they're saying, Okay. Well, you know, I put this down. I put so much money down. They don't realize that all that's gone because they've added it back onto the back end of the mortgage. They have no idea.
Okay, so they keep what's the technique?
They keep amortizing.
Keep refinancing.
Yeah. Well, they're not getting their payment doesn't get bumped up. They just keep adding to it, adding to the balance.
Right.
They're not making their payment go up. They're just adding like another. Let's say your $8,000 worth of payments every year, they're just adding it on with the interest and the penalties.
They just do a reamortization, and she is correct. They're trying to. They can, being someone who was in the modification industry or that business. Mm-hmm. You're right, Nancy. They take the loan, and we're trying to figure out where we could go to make sure that the payment stays the same. We either extend the loan out or we do both. We extend the loan out, and yes, you're right. You get a big surprise when the loan comes due in a balloon payment.
Yeah. And then you add the solar panels on now, okay? People put these solar panels on. They said, oh, it's only going to cost me it's $115 a month. And then I don't have an electric bill and I'm listening to all this. Well, the problem that no one realizes is on some of those deals, not all, but some, if they're renting space on your roof, if you go to sell your house, you got to get this unrelated third party, God knows where, right, to agree to the terms of the contract that you're writing between the buyer and the seller, right? And if the seller has crappy credit, the solar panel company can say, no, we don't want them. Yeah. That hasn't even come out yet.
Nancy, didn't you and Audrey have somebody where they had to come up with $20,000 to pay the thing off?
Yes, yeah, but they actually, yes, that was the solution on that one where they had to pay off but they actually had a loan for the solar panels. Now, you know, this Illinois had that big thing where Illinois get go solar or something. And in that particular case, the solar panels are being put on the roof. It's not costing the homeowner anything. And then they pay like a fixed rate, like $130 a month towards electricity all year long. And they make that much. Yeah, they pay $130, and then all the rest of electricity gets stored and all this garbage. But they're forgetting that they've leased out their roof to somebody. And those people are going to have a say when you go to sell your house.
Not to mention the new buyer might not want it up there.
Well, that's a whole different problem. But let's just say you had two parties that could agree, and then you got to go to the solar people and say, okay, now you got to take over this lease, and the solar people check their credit and say, no, we're not going to do that. They just have no idea what's going on. And I don't blame them because a good friend of mine asked you to pump. She wanted to get solar panels. He wanted to get solar panels. And she wasn't too much for it. And when I started asking the questions, the people selling the product had no idea what I was talking about.
Whoa.
So they said, oh, this is what we did. And they handed me their book. And sure enough, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, when they left, I said, this is really what's going on here. And I Xeroxed the papers that I needed to show them. And I said, the bottom line is, you guys could be prevented from selling your home because you're the owners with the solar panel company.
That's unbelievable.
And they were like, forget it. And I said, well, now maybe a generator looks better. I don't know, but...
Nance, how many people... today with all the expenses that have gone up, even though there is no inflation, right, with the taxes and everything else, how many people do you get? And I'm not talking about just people that are, you know, making $30,000 a year working somewhere. I'm talking about people, maybe a family that's making $150 a year, living in a house in the burbs, maybe have one kid going to school, they got a couple of cars. How many people are comfortably within their means? If you didn't have any of the wealth effect, if you didn't have the house price going up, you didn't have the stocks in your 401k, how many people are comfortable living within their means? I think the percentage is very low.
You know, Tom, that's relative to how the person feels. I mean, some people just are completely clueless.
I mean, how many people make 150?
And you know what? They're better off than me.
I mean, how many people make a couple make $150,000 a year are putting $15,000 a year in savings and living happily on $135? I'm thinking not very many.
I don't, Tom. We just closed a deal where I think between the two people, they're maybe making 70 or 80, and they're as happy as can be.
Really?
To be living in a house and not being in an apartment anymore.
Well, they obviously are not going out this 25-hour drink.
And they borrowed all the money for the down payment from their in-laws.
So they owe them, and
this is just the way it's going. People are just not realizing what they have. Our parents, I mean, they were like, you have to have, you know, you buy a house, you have a mortgage, you have the mortgage burning party, and you're done, right? Hey, people don't realize the mortgage burning party is never going to come.
But when our parents bought a place, the attitude, and when I was young, the attitude is so much different. I mean, Jan comes down and meets the people down here usually on Friday night. The young people don't have anywhere near the attitude that I had. I mean, when I was that age, the world was my oyster. If I wanted to quit my job, I quit. I could go paint a house on a weekend. I didn't give a crap. You know, I didn't have that attitude. But in general, every year, the next year was going to be better. One year I was going to trade. I was going to do this much. The next year we're going to have monthly expirations. I'm going to do even better. The future was so bright you had to wear shades, for God's sake. People don't feel that way today. How many people think that, Jimmy, the people we talk to and they come from the exchanges and so forth, the younger people, how many of those people ever think they're going to walk into a new car showroom and walk out with a car? How many of those people ever think they're going to own their own house? I'm thinking it's minimal.
I agree. I think it is minimal. I think, I mean, it is different, but you're right. I mean, I take my dad, 90. When he bought his house, and his first house, as he always used to tell me, was less than the car he owns now, was the idea that you were going to be there, 30 years.
Right.
And that you were going, you know, this is where you were going to live. And then, you know, things do change. He got transferred out to New York, so we had to buy a new place in New York, in New Jersey. And then
Jersey.
Then he was lucky enough to get an upgrade, and he upgraded. But again, the idea was we were never going to be moving again.
Every time he did, it was an uptick.
Right, and the idea was that you get to live in the house and you pay it off, and hopefully at the end you're going to make a little money. But the thought process was that you were going to make 3% a year on your house. It never was seen as a source of income.
Yeah, where you're going to pay $100 for it, and 10 years later you sell it for $400. It never crossed their mind.
That is correct. And now people are thinking, well, you know, the housing market's too up, or as Nancy just put it, someone buys a house and they're making decent money, but they're putting everything they can into it, and they're borrowing against their in-laws to get to it. And then the question is, at some point, if they outgrow the house, that was the other thing. You only bought another house when you outgrew the house.
Yeah.
You know, that was the, but that's not the mindset. People think that this is something that I can invest.
Well, house is unusual anyway. It's the only really good that you own that is both a consumption and an investment good. Everything else is either one or the other, right?
Correct.
All right, guys, we got a dash. We ran a little bit over. This was fun. We got a good group. Mr. Flanagan's a little under the weather, unfortunately, but hopefully he'll be 100% next week.
He's still on the line, isn't he?
I don't know.
He's out. He left.
He left.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's having a couple issues, but I think he'll be fine. Anyway, SP Futures down 22, NASDAQ Futures down 126. We were down way worse than that last night. We've come back like halfway. Again, gold and silver are rallying. Not much in the way of stocks up. Most of them are down. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
All right.
See you, everyone.
Yeah. That she's right. You were right. That was the only time my dad said they just